So welcome to the Creativity Cafe, where we get to explore creativity in all its aspects, from designing your lifestyle to creating more beautiful and sustainable solutions to global challenges. I'm Katie Curtin, and I'm a creative lifestyle and money coach, and I'm hosting this cafe because creativity and helping creative people thrive is what I'm all about. And you can visit me at www.katiecurtin.com. And today I'm so thrilled to introduce you to today's guest, Denise Rushing, known to many as a sustainable change agent. And she'll be talking on potent change making, thrive and prosper while changing the world. So if you're tired of struggling as a change agent, here is your chance to change that forever. So first, I'd like to explain the setup of the call. I'll be introducing Denise and talking with her for about 45 to 50 minutes. Then we'll open up the call for questions and discussion. If you have your computer in front of you, I'd invite you to visit our Facebook page for Creativity Cafe and click on the Like button. Introduce yourself and post questions and comments there as they come up. And you'll also have chance, and actually I prefer if you can also talk on the phone and ask your questions there, because there we hear your voice. So make yourself comfortable, take a sip of your favorite brew, and get ready for a fascinating time with Denise Rushing. And Denise is the author of the best-selling permaculture book, Tending the Soul's Garden, Permaculture as a Way Forward in Difficult Times. And she teaches experts who are making a difference how to sustain their spirit and create their livelihood without compromising their values. If you long to extend your reach, increase your impact, and make a lasting difference, you're in for a treat today. Working from her organic farm and permaculture garden in Upper Lake, California, Denise literally transformed the political landscape of her community. Denise is an ecological designer, an expert at sustainable community change, and is passionate about creating a new economy by empowering thousands of conscious entrepreneurs to make a living while making a difference. So welcome, Denise.
Thank you very much.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to start asking you some of all the questions I have for you. And
okay.
I'm just expecting to have such a fascinating time here, Denise, because of your background, which I just find so interesting. And to start, I've heard you referred to as the sustainable change agent. So what is sustainable change making, and why is that important?
Well, it's sustainable change making is the act of engaging in what I call, well, actually what Thomas Berry, passionist priest and a modern mystic who recently died, he called the great work of our time. And it's the act of engaging in that work in a way that we can do it over the long haul. And so perhaps some of your listeners are familiar with the writings of Thomas Berry. He said that each age has a great work, and ours is transforming our human global culture into one that's just and sustainable. You know, anybody who's even a little bit sensitive can look out and say that things aren't right, you know, that we have a huge transformation that we need to work on. And so we want to work on that, and we want to create a human way of being that's in harmony with the living systems of the planet, and that means everything from education to economy to the work we do every day. So to do this work is a profoundly spiritual task, and it's a difficult task. It's difficult because we're essentially working within a hostile system that doesn't really want to change, and where the results are often a daily affront to those that are engaged in the work. And it's spiritual because we're called to do it. We just know that it's ours to do. And so I guess I would say sustainable change making is recognizing that it's a marathon and not a sprint, and this will be the work of our lives. And so how do we sustain ourselves in it? Emotionally and it's spiritually and financially.
I love that. Yeah, I love also your reference to the being a marathon rather than a sprint, because
right.
I think a lot of us act like it's a sprint and wonder why we burn out.
Yeah, and you know, self-care is really central to to doing any kind of work that's involving change.
And so, Denise, can you tell me, you have a change maker success formula. What is that?
Well, you know, it's actually something I've been working on for a lifetime, as it turns out. Just, you know, what do I need to do, and how can others use that? And it's really a way of approaching change and doing our work with greater impact, ease, and joy, and clarity, and sustaining ourselves. Archimedes once said, give me a lever long enough and a fulcrum on which to place it, and I can move the world. And so fundamental to being a change maker is the idea that we can sustainably engage where we're planted, that we can find those small points of leverage where maybe a small amount of energy well placed can achieve large results. And how can we thrive in hostile systems? How can we thrive in a hostile ecosystem? So I created my own system, the Changemaker Success Formula, and I'll share that with you today with the goal of sustainability for changemakers and those engaged in business, entrepreneurial business. You know, some of us see entrepreneurs as a way of changing the economy. And my hope is to help others sustain their spirit and sustain themselves financially. And the funny thing is, when you go into business for yourself, you probably know this, Katie, that you become an extremely powerful force for change at first within yourself. You know, you have to address the issues within yourself.
That's certainly the case. And Denise, if you could talk a little louder so that I can catch more.
Okay,
I'm
sorry about
that. That would be greater. And what I would really love, before we go into some of the key elements of your Changemaker formula, is to talk about your background and what brought you to this work. And
Well, and also it might be helpful too just to talk about who might be interested in this call. You know, I'm sort of describing myself as I do this. If you feel you have a message or a gift that you're meant to get out into the world and a burning desire to get it out there, and you're really tired of struggling as a change maker with the ups and downs of the work that you do, if you're creative and you're talented and you haven't yet figured out a way to sustain yourself, if you love the planet and somehow intuitively know that we need a new economy and you want to be a part of creating that, if you understand that the word sustainability has many dimensions, it's not just environmental, but it might be cultural, it might be financial. If you're ready to believe that entrepreneurship is a transforming force for the planet, then you know this conversation is really for you. My background, I started out as a child, just as an extremely sensitive child. I've been concerned over the state of the world since I can remember, and it was difficult growing up with that, you know. And I think most people on this call can probably relate if this is a topic that's attracted you. You know, you see the affront of things that are going on, and you want them to be different. And I ran for office in 2006 for the first time. I had been in a career in energy efficiency. I had decided that my work in the energy world was going to change the world, and I'll touch on that in a moment. But I really wanted to make a difference, and I struggled for the past few years in public office to maintain energy and focus in the face of the overwhelming challenges in the role of community leader these days. What I've come to understand most recently is the role of leader is primarily a catalyst. It's a remover of barriers. And I've learned that much can be accomplished when we work together, and very little change can happen without people dedicating themselves to changing the minds and hearts of others in a way that's effective, and it's certainly not talking at them. And so I like to activate people to step into their role as change maker, because I believe it's a skill that can be learned, it's sorely needed in the world, and it involves simple things like curiosity and listening and observation. And it really starts with centering in oneself and knowing what it is that you are all about and what you want for the world. So you asked me to describe a little bit about my background. I would say in addition to being an author and an ecological designer, I'm also a scientist at heart. My bachelor's degree is in engineering and environmental sciences, And I'm a technologist by training. So for many years, I believed that technology would save us. And I call this my Star Trek mentality. And as much as I love Star Trek, I believe it has done us a real disservice in that a whole generation of kids like me thought that technology would be the answer to the world's problems. It's a tool, of course, and it can be a very useful tool. It connects us to one another. It allows instant communication. And around the world, we hear of events as they're happening, so it's absolutely amazing. But with any tool, with the wrong consciousness, it can be used for ill. So, for example, Facebook is both used by kids to bully other kids, and, you know, some just unmercifully. And at the very same time, it helped whole countries overthrow oppressive regimes. So, you know, that same tool is being used in different ways. So I set about, you know, trying to do my work, and I have been tenacious at it. And I have found in my life, I've gone through cycles of, you know, really working super hard and then reaching that point where I just hit the wall. And so change-making, sustaining one's spirit and sustaining oneself financially seems to be really key. And that's why I like to focus on, well, how do you do that?
Yes. And I'm just going to ask you a little, before I go into your more elements of your Changemakers formula, is that I know that you had a permaculture garden and a farm, and I'm really interested for you to tell us a little bit more about that, because I think some of your ideas that come from permaculture, and you've applied them not only to your farm and your garden, but to your business. So maybe you could tell us a little bit more about that experience.
Well, yeah, thank you for asking. So that's actually the title of my first book, Tending the Soul's Garden, Permaculture as a Way Forward in Difficult Times. And that book was really a manual for me to manage my own inner spirit. And it turned out, when I encountered permaculture at a point where I had been in the technology world for quite some time, and I had decided that I really needed a break, and I had exited that and said, I'm not sure what's next, but I'm taking some time for myself, and I'm just going to, you know, figure out what I'm going to be doing next. And I took my original permaculture design course. I was blown away. I mean, I really was blown away, because I had wanted to learn how to garden, and that's what permaculture, you know, at least on the surface, that's what permaculture is a design system for. It's for the garden and the farm. But as I got into it, I realized that the principles, you know, it's basically a design system that's based on the principles in nature, right, in the natural world.
Mm.
And it starts with an ethical intention and a set of practices that include whole systems thinking, starting small and then expanding, and thoughtful and protracted observation. And it turns out that the practices of permaculture, of course, will help any system, not just the system in the garden. It'll help any system, because all systems are living systems, and that would include, you know, the internet world. It would include human communities. And so I began to apply those same principles, and I think there are a number of people out there doing this now, but I think I may have been one of the first to really to write about how you take permaculture principles and apply it to human communities and human systems. But I began doing that in public life, you know, and some of the principles, as I described in my book, in fact, I'll share with the I'll share as much as I can on the call today, but I do have a link for a free gift for the folks that are on the call if they want to just download these principles and practices. Mm-hmm. So, but the principles are things like least change for the greatest effect, start small, then expand, you know, finding those little places of leverage. And I discovered that as I did that, I was renewing my spirit, too. I realized I was doing what I was meant to do. I was called to do that out of a place of joy and centeredness, and I was enjoying the work, even though it was difficult work. And I would find that sometimes these systems worked and sometimes they didn't. There's a concept in permaculture. In fact, it's the father of ecological farming, Masanobu Fukuoka in Japan, invented this little, well, he may not have invented it, but he wrote about it first, this idea of a seed ball, where you take a, a ball of clay and seeds, and with little compost mixed in. And the seeds are selected so that they will support one another. They're a guild. So as they sprout, they actually support one another in the early, early stages of growth. And you can toss these clay seed balls out into devastated landscapes, landscapes that have been scraped clean and are really hostile to growth. And most of them, if not all of them, but many of them will sprout. And each one of them has a vision of the larger design in it, but it's self-contained. It has value all by itself. And so that's one of the key concepts that I began to use that really sustained my spirit in change making and in business, for that matter.
Yeah, and I actually was on a call where you explained that idea of the seed ball in business, and I found it just fascinating and very, very helpful.
Right, and there are a number of things. You know, the seed ball it's a really powerful concept. In fact, that's really one of the concepts I want to share as part of this formula, right? The concept of, it's not just about starting small. It's about picking the small place that you start very, very strategically. And what you want from that seed ball is you want that first small project to be protected. You want it to get a head start so it has the nutrients it needs to get established, and you want it to have the support in those very early days when it might struggle. And so you pick those projects so that you are addressing some of the barriers in the larger system. So if you pick a project that will prove, for example, that you can make this kind of change and it will work, you pick it very strategically. And so that's what I would ask folks to think about, is that when you're looking at, a larger system, whether it's entering a new, whether you're a startup in a business or whether you're trying to make a change in a community, typically people go gangbusters and they go all in on some big project. And if that project fails, it's a high risk. Whereas if you instead pick a number of smaller initiatives that in and of themselves are really valuable, if they fail, it's no big deal, but if they succeed, they will prove some key element of changing the larger system. That's a strategic choice to make, and that tends to be really powerful in change making.
And I think it's really interesting, because I'm just going to interject here. A thought I have is that I know, as a change maker, and I know a lot of change makers, it may not be applicable to all of them, they have big visions, and like we can just see the possibilities for it being different. So I think the fact that we go in gangbusters at first is in a sense sometimes due to all our goodwill to make a huge difference. And I think it's really important what you're pointing out, is that that's not always the best way to go about changing things. And
exactly.
I think it's great to have this bigger vision. And yet at the same time, as you're talking about, really look at strategically what's going to work and what's going to help you go towards a bigger vision.
Right. And the bigger vision is key, because that's what fuels you, right? That's what you're all about. But the bigger vision, if it hasn't taken root, it's kind of like, the parable of throwing the seeds on the rocks, right? It's not going to – you can put all your energy out there, and it won't change a thing. But if you have the bigger vision and you're looking at it strategically, you can identify the two or three or four things that you know are barriers to that bigger vision happening, and then strategically pick your first projects, small, low risk, maybe not even noticeable. And I think part of it, this is why art is so good. Katie, you're an artist and you cultivate creativity. The reason art is so good is because it's subversive. It's real. It comes from a place that's super creative. It's not an ego place, and people can enjoy the art, and it is changing them in a way, and the art may very well, artists may very well lead the way in change, I've discovered. In fact, I found just in my own community that introducing artists into a community can create a whole way of thinking differently for people, because they experience themselves differently.
Mm. Yeah, that, there's so much to what you're saying there. And actually, I seem to remember from your own farm that you had you integrated some very creative and artistic things there.
We did here. In fact, one of the first things I did, although, you know, there's something in permaculture called a class one error, where you have this big design and you make some big change, and then you live with it forever. Because you put the pond in the wrong place, or you know, and so it's really vital in changing systems that you know, you try to avoid the class one error, things that you may regret. And typically a permaculture designer on a farm will allow, for example, they'll place elements and they'll kind of allow pathways to form before they put a pathway in, just to know where people would normally walk. And I made a couple of class one errors. One of them is I took down a tree that I really regret that I took down now. But one thing that we did that was super valuable is we created a building of natural materials, and it was actually of cob, which is a monolithic adobe and straw bale. And it's just it was a demonstration that local materials were beautiful and durable and that you can build a building with community. And we had a number of people come and take classes and learn how to do that. And so we integrated those elements. We also put in a little food forest, which is medicinal plants and food plants. It's a little permaculture garden. And one thing about permaculture is that the primary design tool in permaculture is the hammock. So you want to be able to sit back and think about what you want, what elements you want, and how they're related to one another. And the key is relationship and elements and how you place them.
Interesting. Yeah. I can see a lot of links to business.
Exactly.
Hammock might not be a bad place to do your business planning.
Exactly. Well, and you know, so and just let's take it to business, because you know what I have discovered is that there's so much noise out there, particularly if you're trying to get online and have an online element to your business. There's so many opportunities to learn different things about marketing and all these things, and it's really important to do the same thing. What are your seed balls? So you're going to create a project. And the project you're going to select is going to have all the elements of the larger design. You know, it's going to have the way to attract a client or customers. It's going to have a way to capture their information. It's going to have a way to, you know, convert the sale. It's going to have all those elements. But you don't have to do everything. You have to do a handful of things really well in order to have a real business. And if you try to do everything, you're going to run out of money before you ever make a dime. So it's vital that you make some choices and make them strategic. You know, if you don't know technology, maybe your first project doesn't have a lot of technology in it, but you introduce one piece so you get to learn that piece. Maybe it's how to run a conference call or, you know, how to put up a landing page or something like that. So there's definite strategy to entering into the business world as well.
Yes, and actually that's a perfect end to you telling us some of the key elements to implementing the Changemaker formula. You've touched on them with the seed ball and some of the things.
Right, okay. Saying. Well, and I'll just give you the acronym. I call it SEEDS, S-E-E-D-S, SEEDS. Yeah. The first element is systems thinking or strategy. So thinking of the whole system and selecting a place to begin. So that's the strategy piece, the S. The second in any system is following your enthusiasm, the E, energy flow, enthusiasm. In the business world, this is also developing your expert credibility. You're developing that in a way that is something you're really enthusiastic about.
Yeah.
That's the E. The second E is expanding your relationships, expanding your reach, extending your reach, you know, to others. So what are the relationships you're going to begin expanding into, whether it's with potential partners or whether it's colleagues or whether it's reaching out to community groups and building your email list in the case of a business, but in the case of a community activist, it's going to be developing those coalitions and those connections. And then the D is design. So designing from pattern to details, designing your offer. So this is like the seed ball, right? What is in the seed ball? What's in your offer? What offer are you making? If you're in business, if you are looking at community change, it's really looking at the patterns that are already there and what is it you're going to, you know, introduce. And then the final one is, I call it systems, but it's also just as easily start small than expand, because most people think of the word systems and they go, oh my God, you know, I've got to do all these things. But start small then expand. Pick the basic elements, systems that you're going to need to succeed and to go to the next level. And again, if you can pick one thing to learn or two things to learn each time, then you're building your arsenal and your capability to do more later. So that's the formula, seeds.
Wonderful. And what I'm wondering here is that, can you give us an example of how you've put it in practice or one of your clients? Because I know a lot of us get kind of overwhelmed by all of the possibilities and have a problem actually choosing the one thing that we can start with. So
right.
I think it'd be really helpful if you gave us a couple of examples.
Well, and I had mentioned, I think even in the preview to the call, that I could talk about using a book as an example on how to enter into a new business area. So I'll just use that example because I've done this with others, with clients, and also successfully done it myself. I've, you know, written a book, ranked it on Amazon, and got it out there helping me build my business. And so the idea behind that was I was looking at the landscape, and of course this is systems thinking. This is the strategy part of the Changemaker Success Formula. I'm looking at the landscape and I'm realizing, okay, I want to enter into something new. It's something I know a lot about, but people don't know that I know this. And so I need to figure out where to begin. And I had never written a book before at that time, and I didn't really know much about book publishing, but I stumbled across some things that really worked and actually have kind of developed them myself further. I'm not sure how long this window will stay open for Amazon, but it's open now, and so this is the one thing I'm hoping that, you know, those who are thinking about writing a book, I hope you do it soon, because this will work for you now. It may not work a year from now. But you start small. You write what you know, you write it into the book, and you can actually get it published fairly easily on Amazon Kindle. There are a number of ways to do that, but you can publish it on Amazon Kindle. And at the time, I just felt so strongly about the message. I liked the Amazon Kindle direct publishing because you can get your book out there for free for 5 days, and it you can share it with all your Facebook friends and all your folks on your list, right? Whatever list you have, if you have one. And so I did that. And what I discovered was the algorithms within Amazon, if you shared your book for free out there to everyone, suddenly Amazon sees that as a bestseller, even though it's their free Kindle free publishing. And so they started to rank it on the first page in the permaculture area. And all of a sudden, you know, when it wasn't free anymore, because they only allow you 5 days of free, suddenly it's a bestseller now, and it's because it's on the first page and people are clicking on it, and it was getting some good reviews because the folks who had downloaded it were all my friends. And after that, the book got really popular in the permaculture circles. And so that was just one example of sort of entering into what I considered a hostile ecosystem and coming up with sort of a unique, coming up with a strategy for following my enthusiasm and building my expert credibility, expanding my relationships, because I grew my list pretty substantially with that that move, because not only were people downloading my book that I knew, but they were sharing the link with their friends. And I was addressing a key barrier to me entering into this new area, which is I didn't have the credibility at the time. Mm-hmm. And so that was the purpose of doing that. And I really started small. I mean, it was one simple book. It wasn't that I had this master plan that I was going to go out there and do, you know, giant websites and huge events and all those other things that are possible in the online world. I just started with the book. So that's just one example of how it can work.
Thank you. And if, let's say, people aren't good at writing and don't feel like they can do that.
Well, and that's
is there another?
That's a really good point, Katie, because there are so many ways to engage these days. You know, some people aren't good at speaking. They're good at writing, but they're not good at speaking. Some people are really creative, artistically creative. And it seems to me, and this is just me now, but my clients have found this to be true as well, and that's why I have that second E in the seeds part of the Changemaker Success Formula, and that is follow your enthusiasm, follow what you do well, and find a way to get the stuff done that you don't do well by, you know, engaging others who do it well. And at first that seems a little daunting because you don't want to pay a lot of money and you don't want to form a team if you don't have any money coming in and that sort of thing. But believe me, if you there's a lot of inexpensive ways to engage others these days that can get you started. And just one example, you know, as much as I appreciate your artistic creativity, I'm not much of an artist at all. I mean, I can draw a few things, but if I want to do a nice banner headline for a website, I will spend a day working on that, and that's a day at the end of it with something that doesn't look all that great. I can go to Fiverr.com, Fiverr.com, and spend $5, maybe 10 if I want to find a couple people doing this, and post, you know, and ask them to develop a banner for a website. And for $5, I end up with something far better than I would have created. Now, granted, it may not be a $1,000 design from some high-end marketing firm, but it's a whole lot better than me spending the day doing that. And so I've found systems. That's back to the systems piece of it. You find systems that work one at a time to replace the things that you don't do as well or don't enjoy. You know, kind of stick with what you enjoy and allow others who, you know, enjoy that other piece to do those pieces. And that's been a real key to me and my clients expanding their businesses to find, you know, over time, it's not going to happen overnight, but over time you find the pieces that you don't enjoy doing and let go of them.
Mm. And you use the word hostile ecosystem.
Yeah.
A few times. Maybe you can explain that a little bit more when you're talking about the business world.
Well, sure. And I'll talk about, first, in the context of change making. You know, whenever you're entering into, let's say you're in a community that has done things a certain way for a while and you're introducing a new idea. We're doing that, in fact, in the next couple of days, we're introducing the idea of time banking here. And we're starting, we've actually been at it for a while with a small group that really supported the idea and have been sort of core to the system. And we're just now reaching out to folks that maybe haven't heard of the concept and maybe would be a little more reluctant to embrace the idea. And so the system itself, our system of currency, has been the way it is forever. So you know, who are we to introduce some, you know, different way of transacting business, right? That would be a hostile ecosystem. There'd be a lot of people out there if you went out there in a really big way and said, everybody needs to do this, and you start, you know, just putting it all out there without any proof at all, chances are that the idea would be dead within a couple of months. You know, you'd run out of enthusiasm because people would just shoot it down. So what we've done instead is we've introduced the idea among a group where the protection and support, and you know, you can prove out the concept and people are actually benefiting from it, and now you can grow it. And so the same is true for business. Whenever you're starting a new business, you're entering into, I'll call it, a hostile ecosystem. You have an ecosystem out there, and it's just like an ecosystem in that there are, you know, major players consuming all the resources. There are, you know, lots of things going on, and the system shifts based on feedback. So Facebook and all those things that are happening in social media has turned us humans into, you know, our human commerce into an ecosystem. And I'll tell you what, the big players are still trying to figure out social media because it doesn't really work well for them. They can tweet all they want, and we're not going to want a tweet from AT&T. You know, we're not going to go follow them. We follow our friends. And so if our friends are saying, hey, I just found this great deal, you would listen to that before you'd listen to something coming from, you know, Procter & Gamble. And so we have this ecosystem that's now got all these infinite feedback loops and all that, and it's a hostile ecosystem if you're trying to go big, but if you can stay within your little niche in it, your little group, it's not hostile at all. And that's kind of my point, is that you can – with all these little groups doing what they're doing, we can shift the entire ecosystem. Mm. It's kind of the power of many seed balls as opposed to one seed ball trying to change the whole thing.
Wonderful. And I'm just wondering, when you're so let's just talk a little bit about, because you've talked about this new ways of defining value and exchanging value and currency. And what about the whole concept of money? And there's many change makers who struggle with this concept, I certainly have, and believe that doing the work they do and earning money are mutually exclusive. Why is that? And can this thinking be reframed?
Well, and I think, yes, it can be reframed, and I think you're probably the expert at that. I know that you have a program that helps folks do that. I believe that it's vital that we reframe it for a lot of reasons. One of them is that it's our job, you know, in the great work of our time to transform our economy. And it's going to be very difficult to transform our economy if we're not engaged in livelihood, you know, if we have to turn to our livelihood to the old way and the old system. We don't have a new system yet, and yet, you know, we're all trying to thrive and eat and, you know, decide to go back to our day jobs instead of do our art or whatever we're doing. If there were a way that we could do our work and get compensated for it, that would be, that would make us happier and it would make the system work better. But also just think about this. Katie, if I would trust you, if you were earning $1 million a year, I would trust you to spend that money far better than many of the people out there that are earning $1 million a year right now. I would trust you to invest that in other entrepreneurs. I would trust you to invest that in worthy causes. You know, it is okay for conscious people to have a flow of abundance because they're going to be conscious with that too. Money is just a tool. And so I would much rather have conscious individuals making a living and doing well because I know that they'll do the right things, and that money is really representative of energy flow, and that energy is going to flow to others who need it and also to other entrepreneurs. It's, you know, it's going to begin to create a whole new system, and I do believe that entrepreneurs will do that. We're going to change the economy, and in the process, we're going to change the world.
Yeah, and there's so many new things that are emerging right now.
Yeah, and it's tough. I know it's tough. There's, like, there are many people who struggle with the concept of money. You know, myself included in the early days, I was like, you know, how can I do worthy work and get paid for it? You know, that's, I mean, that's a lot of, we just somehow in our past or in our, you know, our background, we just think that our value is, you know, it's not valuable, or maybe it's not worth the money. But that shift has to happen because we are. And also because it's vital that we do this for the collective. It's not just about us.
Mm. And I think because so many of us have, identified money with evil because of the, you have to say evil purposes that money has often been used for in this society.
Exactly.
And where decisions have been made which have absolutely helped to destroy ecosystems and part of the planet because of money.
Yeah. Exactly. And, you know, I think every change maker and change-making entrepreneurs in particular need to be sustainable in all ways. They're not going to last if they haven't found a way to sustainably earn a living. They're not going to be able to do as good a work. They're not going to have as much reach. I know some entrepreneurs that are making literally seven figures right now that are doing some amazing work in Africa and in the United States and around the world, really, that are investing that money in some things that are literally changing the world. And they're doing it because they have this flow. They've got this flow of abundance, and they're able to invest.
Mm-hmm. And people who, I've certainly been in this category where many times struggling for money, I just haven't had the time to focus as I want on my creative, on the arts, on the social change movements that I'm really interested in getting behind. And so I really do agree with you there. Now, there's some other things that I'd love to talk about, which is, Can you tell us a little bit more about effective change making and what might be the big mistakes to avoid if we're engaged in transformational work?
Yes, there are a few mistakes that we all tend to make when we're engaged in transformational work. The first and probably the biggest is lack of self-care. Many people go after their projects with a real zeal in the beginning, and they put everything into it because we have that passion in the beginning, and we might forget to do what we need to do for ourselves. Some of us have been at it for a while. You know, I've been involved in community work for quite some time, and I find that I'm at my most effective when I'm in a rhythm. It's like breathing in and breathing out. You have to breathe in sometimes in order to breathe out. And so to have a regular rhythm of self-care and introspection and reflection and meditation or whatever it is that brings you life. For me, I find that it's really important, and this is one of the key learnings for me, is to find out what my nutrients are. And so I kind of use the metaphor of a garden a lot. When you're planting a garden, you don't plant it into soil that doesn't have any life in it or any nutrients in it. You need that soil to be alive. And so one of the questions I like to ask myself is, what brings me life? You know, what nutrients, what do I need in my life in order to make sure that I am a healthy human being and I have healthy, you know, abundance can spring from my efforts. And so whether that is that you need to get outside and you mentioned, you know, my permaculture garden. One of the reasons I have a permaculture garden isn't just to grow food in it. It's because it's one of the things that brings me life. You know, if I don't have garden time, in fact, last year I was engaged in some heavy-duty efforts and I didn't plant a summer garden, and by the end of the season I was just really regretting it. Fortunately, I have a lot of perennials, so I was able to get outside and, you know, tend the garden, but you know, I need to do that. That's one of my basic needs. I need to have a little garden. So ask yourself that question. That's one of the first big mistakes, is lack of self-care. Ask yourself the question. Another mistake that some folks often make is that they go off in a direction and they really haven't sufficiently clarified the reasons why they're doing this, the big why, you know, the dream. They, you know, a lot of people will say, I'm going off in this, I'm going to do this. And they don't have a sense of, you know, the big reasons why in the background. So it's important to have that, I'll call it strategy, but it's also whole systems thinking, it's dreaming. What is it that really fuels you? Because you'll run out of juice if you don't have, you will run into barriers along the way, and if you have a purpose that is being fueled from your soul, you'll have the energy to overcome those barriers, and if without that, you won't. So that's another big mistake that people make. A third is lack of focus or lack of goals. You know, we get scattered fairly easily. And sometimes it's just important to ask the question, what's the most important thing that I need to be doing right now, and what's the next step in that? I find those two questions are really valuable, because that's not urgent, that's important. You know, we often work on urgent things instead of important things. So what's the most, you know, if you have three projects that you know are giant projects that take lots of steps to complete, you know, to really keep those in mind and know what they are, and to have a focus every day on sort of accomplishing something in handling those big projects. Uh-huh. And then in business, and this is probably true in community change making as well, lack of immediate flow. We need to. It's fine to think long term and big picture, but we need to feed ourselves, and we need to also have a few quick wins, even if we're just working in community work. We need a couple of quick wins. And an example I'll give you is there's a town that is in my area that has had a real difficult time of it, very low income. They've got lots of difficult things going on there. And they had a group that formed that continually wanted to buy out the water system from a major corporation. Well, that's a long-term project. It's one of those things that may never happen, but it's going to take a lot of work, right? And for years they've been sort of trying to work on that, but they haven't made a lot of headway. And so that same group, you know, in working with them, I said, you know, one of the things that might be helpful is to have a few quick wins that the community can get behind that might involve water, but that, you know, that are doable, that you'll actually be able to point to and say, hey, we did that. And so they actually developed a community garden with water that was pumped from the lake as opposed to from the water company. So people who couldn't afford to grow vegetables in their own yard could come to the community garden and grow their vegetables. And that ended up being something that the group put together. They got it done, and now they can move on to other projects and start to grow their capabilities. And so having something immediate and good take place is often a mistake. You know, if you don't do that, you often struggle. And then, of course, lack of a longer-term strategy. You know, if you don't have – if the big why is there, but you don't have sort of an idea of what steps might be helpful in getting there, you know, knowing where to go next and how that – if that is successful, what that might lead to. It's always helpful to have the step after. It's kind of like a chess game in a way. You want to know what your next few moves are going to be. You don't have to know the whole board and the whole picture, but you do have to know, if I succeed at this, what happens next. And so having some strategy, and it's helpful to have that. And if you don't have that, that's often a mistake people make.
Mm-hmm. So that's very, very useful, what you've just given us. And so what I'm wondering is, and this is very similar question, is what's the important thing that change makers can do to sustain their energies and abundance in their lives?
Well, you know, I'll go back to my change maker success formula, the seed system. If you're going to sustain abundance in your life, and as a change maker in particular, it's helpful to have a plan. It's helpful to have, you know the nutrients that feed your soul. It's helpful to be knowing your big why, your big picture. So you start with the big thinking. You invest in where your energies draw you. And you really invest in relationships, extending and expanding those relationships. Those are probably those are the first three and probably the most important. The other thing is, and I'll just use this from a business perspective, is often change makers who are entering into business are reluctant to make an offer. They don't have an idea of what they want to offer in exchange for money or in exchange for people's information or whatever. They just don't, you know, they don't have a sense of that. And so spending some time designing an offer and realizing that, you know, it's got to be something you love. It can't be something that you're just tossing out there because you want to make money. It's got to be something you really love and want to deliver. That's really key. And to start small. Don't think that, you know, you're going to change the whole world in the first day, or, you know, that if you're launching a business, if your business isn't going to be an overnight sensation. In fact, it's so funny because most people who seem to be overnight sensations, when they're interviewed, say, you know, the question's asked, well, how did you become an overnight sensation? And it almost always happens that they've been at it for 9 or 10 years, right? working different angles and trying to solve the problems for their customers. So, in answer to your question, how do you sustain your energies? Again, it's breathing. Breathe in and breathe out. Really know what. Be aware that the thoughtful and protracted observation. Be aware of your energies and what fuels you, what feeds you, what nutrients you need to survive and thrive. And then be aware of the energies of the system that you're in. And that has been, in fact, for me, one of the most effective things that I could do in change making in community is to be aware of the energy flow in the community. One quick example I'll give you on that one is that I was aware when I first got involved in as a community leader, I was aware that there were a lot of groups that were not working together, that when it came down to it, there were little silos of people doing various things and they weren't talking to each other and they were all over the map. And every one of them had people burning out because there was like maybe two volunteers in an organization that would do all the work and everybody else wouldn't. And so that was pretty common. And I thought, well, maybe one of the least change for the greatest effect in this system is to find a way to cultivate more volunteers and also connect these groups so they're not duplicating the efforts of each other. And I really put some thought into what would be the least change for the greatest effect, where I could get people working together in something that almost everybody could agree was a good idea. And what I found was a good idea in our community was we live in a rural area, and we're in California, where we have oak woodlands and we have a lot of grasslands. Turns out that we didn't have a wildfire protection plan in place, and so that was something I could get everybody rallying around. They got to meet each other, you know, they got to work on their little piece of it and get to know each other better. And we had avenues for people who wanted to work just on a part of it to get involved. And suddenly, you know, we have more volunteers, people are getting to know each other. And that was, you know, it was one example that I picked it because it would survive easily in this system that we were in. And I wouldn't say it's a hostile system, but I'd say, you know, we needed something that would survive. And it was an example of how we address the major barriers to change. So that's just one example of how you sustain your energy. You have to identify where the energy is going, you know, and where what the flow is in yourself, but you also need to take a look at the system too.
And, you know, before we go into questions, because I'm going to get some questions soon from the audience, I'm thinking, as a when I've been involved in different projects and both volunteer and otherwise, where we're trying to change something, sometimes there's really the psychology that you just have to work yourself to the bone to prove yourself as a change maker, and there's not the idea that that it's a good thing to take a rest, that you really need to sustain and practice self-care. And that's been, you know, I think a model that's been around for quite some time. I mean, certainly since my youth and being involved in the radical movements then,
yeah.
Is that it was expected you just give every moment of your life to it.
Right.
And I think, now that's maybe a bit dramatic, but I think also even in thinking of when I was volunteering at my kid's school, and what happens often with volunteers is that it's not like you can just do a little. So you either do very much or you just drop out. And that is kind of a dynamic that I think there is in some places where you do get involved, is that you feel not so good if you only do a smallish amount compared to other people. And
right.
That actually encourages there to be just a few very devoted people who actually burn themselves out.
Yeah, and sometimes in those particular systems, the very devoted people don't want to let go of control, and so they end up taking everything on because they just don't want to hand off little pieces of it and have it done differently than they would do it, or they want to boss people around, and, you know, I mean, sometimes that happens too. But I think if you want to look at change over the long term, and let me just ask the question of and have people think about this. When have you changed the way you look at things or the way you are? And for me, it's been encountering a people or a new experience that has changed me, right? So I'm more changed by who people are than I am by what they say or even by what they do. I'm more changed by who they are, and I might decide, wow, I really want to work with them because I enjoy them. I'm having fun. I'm enjoying. So our energies as a change maker, if we're taking care of ourselves, if we're finding whimsy and joy in our work, even if it's hard work, that is an attractive force that brings people in that want to be involved. It's also good for us because we're not driven by control and our ego to sort of this change is going to be a reflection of my impact on the world, right? We're really just engaging in the work from a very spiritual place that we're going to do the work whether or not the outcome is exactly as we had hoped. And so that energy that we engage with is the energy that can potentially draw others to the work that we're doing. And it's also more likely to change folks who are not thinking the way that we're thinking. And I find that, again, I don't change people's minds very often by what I say. I find that more often than not, they will change as a result of an experience they've had, either an experience of me or an experience of, you know, some experience that we've created, like the natural building that we did or something like that. So, you know, experiences change people. Education can change people, but they have to want it. They go out and seek that education. And so some of the goals of a change maker is to find those little points of leverage where you can, you know, put a little energy in and maybe get enough of a shift in the minds and hearts of others. I don't know if that's making sense, but
oh, I love it, and I just love your concept of finding the little points of leverage.
Yeah, and sometimes that's hard.
I had never quite thought of that in terms of change making, but it's so obvious when you think about it.
Yeah, well, and also, I mean, so many people have said, Albert Einstein said that you don't change a system with the same level of thinking that created it, and I will say it's the same level of energy that created it. You know, the angry activist is never going to create a peaceful world.
Mm-hmm.
Their anger can be channeled to productive use, don't get me wrong, and I think there's a role for them to sort of break down doors and open the doors to begin with, but their energies will not be creating peace. And that's why, you know, I prefer a peace movement as opposed to an anti-war movement, because I like to put the image in everyone's head of what's peace. You know, what does that look like?
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to actually right now open things up and see if we've and people, if you would like to press *6 if you have a question, that would be great, and we'll just wait for a moment or two to see if anybody's got a question. I'm going to see if I can get over to the Facebook
page.
Also,
Katie, I would mention that I had mentioned earlier that if folks wanted to get a copy of these permaculture principles, practices, etc., I do have a copy on my website at deniserushing.net. And so I put it right on the front page for them there if they want to go and get a copy. And I also offer a strategy session for those who really want to think through this strategy for themselves. But deniserushing.net, and you can get you can download both the practices and the principles of permaculture.
Yeah, and I really encourage you to do that. Plus, I can imagine a strategy session with Denise would be very powerful.
Oh yeah, and that
because you're very strategic.
And I can't take if there's 100 people that do that, I won't be able to do that. I actually have a limited number of those, but
yep.
That's why I ask for folks to apply that are really serious about it.
Exactly, and I'm not seeing anybody yet who's taken themselves off mute. So *6 if you've got a question. And I'm going to, I don't know if you can get over the Facebook page too. I'll try and get over there. And maybe you could talk until we have another person who's asking a question. Maybe you could just go further into one of the concepts that you think are really important that we've been talking about today. Perhaps something more on self-care?
Well, yeah, I call it extreme self-care because often that's what we need to do. There was a book maybe a decade ago that came out called Simple Abundance, which I still love.
Mm.
And it's really about caring for yourself first because, you know, do we even know, particularly women, I mean, do we even know what it is that we enjoy? Sometimes we just have to pause and really understand what draws us. And so when I say part of the Changemaker Success Formula is following your enthusiasms and your energy, there has to be a lot of observation in some cases, and certainly was for me, in knowing what drew me. You know, what am I enthusiastic and energetic about? What is it that brings me life? And I believe very strongly now, and as a result of the work I've done in permaculture, but also in change making, that, you know, if we're doing the work that draws us, the work that we most enjoy, it seems to be part of a bigger plan. You know, we get presented with opportunities that we may never have dreamed of, and so we step forward into that light of what draws us. And granted, there are barriers, and we probably have a big vision of the world as we want it to be, or the business as we want it to be. And hopefully we do have that big vision, but it doesn't have to be a really super specific vision. It has to be vague enough that we can allow the universe to also work, and the path may not be entirely clear all the way to the end. Just the next few steps might be clear.
think that's so true what you're saying there. And I actually just went over to the Creativity Cafe, and I don't see a question, but Natalie said, "I'm so delighted with the content. Thanks for sharing your wisdom, Denise."
Thank you, Natalie. I just typed in hello. I just found the page.
Oh, good. Yeah. And I'm going to just go back to the conference here and see if there's anybody off mute. Got a lot of people here, but doesn't seem to be any questions yet. Maybe I'm going to take it. Oops. You know what? That's weird because I put it on question and answer, but it didn't stay there. So
okay, so maybe
I'm going to just, in fact, there's something. We've been really blessed with a lot of tech challenges right now. I'm going to try and get it completely off mute. So, no, it's staying on lecture. I think I may have to do this manually. So, we'll sorry, everybody, especially those who may be wanting to ask the questions. It seems like my board isn't working here. Let me see if I can open it up. I'll see if this works. Is there anybody who that still hasn't done it though? I've not ever had this happen before.
Can you unmute everyone?
That's what I'm trying to do, but I don't seem to be able to yet. Oh, wait a second. I've got another idea. I'm going to do something that, for some reason, is this that? I don't know. It's still not working. Maybe you could continue talking for a moment or two, Denise, and I'm going to see if I can find some way to make this thing work. Because this
okay. Well, I feel, first of all, I feel like I've been doing a lot of talking, so I'd love to have some interaction. But I will say that I'd like to talk just a little bit about a garden, because permaculture applied to business. I'd referenced the principles found in nature, and I'd reference a garden. And so I just like to mention that in a garden, if you're using these principles, you're starting with observation, and you have this idea of approaching the problem as one would approach a natural garden. And in a garden, a permaculture garden, everything gardens. And so the idea in using these principles is that everything is a garden, including human communities and even your own inner well-being, and everything gardens. Every element is gardening. And an example that I use in my book is a rock. If you place a rock in the garden, a well-placed rock might provide microclimates for some plants. It might provide shade. It has, maybe some aesthetic value. It has relationships with the plants that are nearby. And so you've chosen that element and put it in the garden. It itself is gardening. It has a role. And so that would suggest that sometimes we should choose our spot, prepare our soil, plant our seeds in that spot, and then feed what it is we want to grow. And that's how we do it in the garden, and then harvest what we want to share. And the whole concept of feeding what we want to grow, you've prepared the soil so that the seeds that you planted will have the nutrients that they need. And you keep feeding them what they need, the water, hopefully some really nice organic compost if it's a real garden. And so you take that same metaphor and apply it to business or apply it to community change, and the first step is choosing your spot. Just like in any garden, choose your spot. It doesn't have to be the whole picture. It can be just your spot. And for me, there was something very freeing about that. Being able to just choose my spot based on what drew me, what my energies were, and then looking at that spot saying, what do I need to do to prepare the soil here? What needs to happen in order for this to be a fertile spot? So in the case of entering into the world of community and cultural change, it was writing a book on permaculture. I needed to really develop and cultivate my capabilities. I needed to develop and cultivate my sensibilities and have a garden so that I had my self-care in order. And then plant your seeds. And some of the seeds are going to grow and some of them aren't. You can even create seed balls where you have, you know, multiple seeds that are kind of working together to accomplish a certain thing. But you plant your seeds, and you've selected your seeds pretty carefully based on the spot that you're in and the soil that you have. And then how do you feed them? How do you feed what you want to grow as opposed to attack what you don't want to grow? How do you feed what you do want to grow? So the last point I'll make on this, Katie, and hopefully you're solving some of the technical challenges, is that in a forest, the forest is in balance, and left to themselves, the forest doesn't need to be weeded or plowed or fertilized. It exists in beauty, and the plants are taking care of their own needs. There are some plants that are nitrogen fixers. There are others that are dynamic accumulators. They bring up nutrients from the soil. There are other plants that are, you know, growing tall and providing shade. There's different layers of plants, from ground cover to climbing plants to the very tall trees. And a forest is alive, and everything is related to one another, and they found their place, and the ones that have found a good place thrive, and the ones that are struggling because they've managed to sprout on a rock just aren't going to thrive. And so the forest takes care of itself. Humans don't need to go in there and fertilize it. It's doing its job if it's a healthy forest ecosystem. And the goal in permaculture is to create a healthy forest ecosystem in the actual garden world, but that's what we also want to create in our business and in our community. We want a system that is aligned and is taking care of itself.
So thank you, Denise. I don't seem to, I've been pressing all the buttons and they're not working either on my phone or elsewhere.
Well, I'll tell you what, let's just do this. If folks are on Facebook, go ahead and put any questions in there. And if they have burning questions that they were not able to get answered on this call, I'll go ahead and give out my email address if you have a question for me that you want an answer to, because I'm pretty good about answering the email.
And I do have one more comment on Facebook. It's not a question, but
okay.
It says, everybody seems to agree with you so much. Agreed. It's from Diane. Agreed. Everything you said, I resonate with. Thank you for the confirmation.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful. Well, hopefully, you know, I'm sharing wisdom people already have inside them.
Yeah.
So my email address is denise@tacticalpartners.com. TACTICAL, tacticalpartners.com. And if you have a burning question that you just weren't able to ask on this call, feel free to send it to me.
Oh, I have another comment here, which is great, from Lori. And it says, thanks to you both for this extraordinary hour. The first time I read about permaculture, I felt that I had found my native language. Nothing exists without being part of the system and without endless opportunity for creation and creativity. The principles are at work in our suburban garden, but also feed the strategic planning of life, moment-to-moment living, and this current fun process of setting up a business. Lori, I love that.
Yeah, absolutely. Lori, that's so true. And what's amazing about the approach is that it's alive. You know, this is a... We're observing it, and we're in the business world in particular. Things are changing so quickly; it's just like a living system. I'm really enjoying the comparison to the garden.
Yes, and okay. I'm afraid if I fiddle around anymore with this conference thing, I'm just going to get myself out of it. But we'll do one more try. And actually, Denise, maybe you're. I just thought. Maybe you could try pressing star, let me see. It says star 1 to begin and manage the Q&A.
Okay, I'll...
Now, when I pressed it, it almost got me off the conference call, but...
Okay, let me try
maybe
it.
There's something wrong with my systems here.
Okay, I just pressed star 1.
Did anything happen?
I don't know.
No, I guess not. And people, if you can press star 6 again and see if it works at all. I mean, yes, I've been with this conference system for a while. And
are you asking me to press star 6?
Pardon?
Are you asking me to press star 6?
No. Let me try something. I think that's usually... No, that mutes people personally. So I don't think you should press that. No, it just seems that these, it's not meant to be. I'm so sorry, because I'm sure there would be quite a lively discussion. But as Denise says, send the questions and also post them on the Creativity Cafe later. Or, yes, and I will be sending out to everybody in the call the links to Denise's stuff, as well as you might want to post that on the Creativity Cafe, too.
I'll definitely do that.
And just before, so I think we're going to need to wrap up. And is there anything else that you would like to add to that, Denise, about how people can contact you? And also, yeah, just anything that you think would be important for them to remember out of this call.
Well, I'll just reaffirm that my website, deniserushing.net, and it, for those who want to go further with the idea of publishing, I do have some offerings that I'll be making you aware of, Katie, in the future. I won't put those out on the call today, but if you want those free gifts, again, just go to deniserushing.net and sign up, and I'll send them to you or give you a page that you can download them. And you have my email address, denise@tacticalpartners.com. And so that's probably the best way to get in touch with me.
Wonderful, and I'm really looking forward to your offerings on about how to publish on Amazon. I'm sure there's a lot of people here who would be interested, too.
Right, and I'm pretty excited about it, so I'll be sure and let you know, and you can get it out to your folks.
Yes, I certainly will. So just to close up here, if you need any help in creating an outside-the-box sustainable lifestyle and business, you can also check out my website at www.katiecurtin.com. And in the next week, I'm also going to be sending out some information on my upcoming 10-day Money Matrix Magic Marathon, which is devoted to helping you clear your negative money beliefs and patterns and implementing new positive money habits. And we talked a little on the call today about how many of us may have actual blocks to making money because we associate it with evil or it's not being used right. And it's really important that in order for you to have a business that sustains itself, that those kinds of mindsets get out of the way. And some of them can be pretty deeply rooted, I've found. So, and, you know, that way you get to express your creative gifts in the world and thrive, and isn't that what we all want? So also I would like to tell you about next month's Creativity Cafe on March the 6th, which is going to feature Karina Shield, an internationally recognized pioneer of sound therapy and voice healing. And she's presented at conferences across the globe, appeared on national radio and TV, and produced music CDs and videos. And her book, Soul Voice, has been translated and is available in 6 languages. So I'm very excited about that. And Denise, thank you so much for sharing your very different approach to change-making and building your business. And I think it's very refreshing how you're using the principles of permaculture and some of the other social change principles in a very effective way. And thank you so much to all our listeners for taking this time with us. And I look forward to spending time together in our other Creativity Cafe events.
Okay, thank you so much, Katie.
Bye, and best of luck in your wonderful change-making enterprises.
Thanks.
Right then. So I think we can. It's not even dropping the call. Wait a minute. Star 9.
Well, bye now.